Accession number 28415, reel number 2.
Telling me what you did
yes
when you were on the submarine.
On the troop ship, we used to come up on the deck with a mug of hot tea and see all these ships around us all zigzagging because of the submarines. One morning we came up and there was nothing, just to see we'd broken down. Very anxious moments. Thank God we weren't torpedoed. We managed to get repaired and away we went, and I don't think we caught up the convoy at all. We finished up in Cape Town.
What was your routine on the boat? I mean, 2 months is a long time.
Routine? There was no routine, dear. Sleeping down below was hell. It was hot, overcrowded, people were sick. I was asleep up on deck.
Did you have hammocks slung?
There were hammocks and there were on the top of the mess tables.
So you'd sleep there and would you go individually for meals, or would it be...
No, we'd all sit down at once for meals.
And was that cooked by the ship's crew?
That's correct, yeah. And every now and again... Oh no, that's a different ship. Yeah, that was a different ship, yeah. Britannic was a nice clean ship. But as I said, I prefer to sleep on deck. Even in the bad weather, I managed to shelter underneath something on deck and sleep there.
So it was... Did you play cards or was it boring?
And mostly it was bingo, yeah, which was then called housey-housey, yeah. And there's lots of money passed through, yeah, that was the main thing.
And writing letters home?
And of course writing letters, yeah.
So, did you have to do sort of gun maintenance? And
not on that one. On another ship I had to. I don't think there was any guns at all on the Britannic. No.
How many troops were on it?
That I couldn't tell you, my dear, but there were thousands, including nurses as well.
So was there segregation between the men and the women?
Yes, the women were allowed their own quarters and we weren't allowed on the same deck.
Did you do any little concert parties or anything like that?
No, except when we crossed the equator, we had the usual being shaved by King Neptune, etc., and all that. that was funny. Yeah.
A bit of light relief, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the crew did well for that with us. Yeah.
So when you got down to Cape Town, you stayed there 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
Did you go off exploring?
Yes, as soon as the lads came off the boat. There was loads of cars lined up and the occupants would beckon us over and they'd take us home and take us drives around, make us welcome. And I'm sure if I had to be married, I would have teamed up with one from the house. She was very friendly, etc. All innocent, obviously, we're only young. And when the war was over and we came back to England, of course, rations were scarce then, you know, and they even sent us parcels. This lady sent us parcels from South Africa. And they treated us really lovely.
It must have been strange going to somewhere that wasn't at war and had blackouts and stuff.
At one time, when we were at sea, all our ships were blacked out. We weren't even allowed to smoke on deck. We weren't allowed to throw anything overboard at all. Sure where the convoy was. And what did we see? A big liner, music playing, blazing lights coming from Africa. And we looked at it, we couldn't believe it. Just sailed past us, because they were neutral, you see. So they didn't have to cover their lights up, and they were dancing and singing on the deck as it went past us. And we thought, God, what a difference. Always remember that.
So after your 5 weeks in Cape Town, what did happen then?
We went onto a scruffy ship called the Orbita, and as you ate your porridge or your rice pudding, the blooming, what do you call them, cockroaches would fall into it.
Oh.
Oh dear. And that took us to Bombay.
How long did that take?
I can't remember, really. I just can't remember. Cape Town to Bombay, not long.
Were you in a convoy then? Was there an enemy?
No, we weren't in a convoy then. We were just independent.
So there wasn't any risk for...
No, not in that area.
No. And what was your first impression of Bombay?
Well, you couldn't get much of an impression from the deck of the boat. But after that, all I could see was squalor. Squalor and poverty in India. And I witnessed the Bengal famine, when it was awful. I've seen bodies in ditches, saw an old chap die. They tried to push a piece of banana into his mouth, but it was too late, he was dead. And now I would never waste a bit of food, never. Because I always think of that Bengal famine.
What time of year did you get there, when you actually got to Bombay?
Well, it must have been near Christmas. It must have been some Christmas, because I remember a Welsh choir singing Home Sweet Home. Yeah, Welsh choir on the boat. It was lovely.
So, when you got to Bombay, were you stationed there, or did you then...?
No, we moved up to a place called Dulali. And any soldier will tell you, it drives you mental. It's what you call Dulali Taps. If anybody's gone off his rocker, they say he's Dulali Taps. Because we were there for a long time and it was boring and hot and dirty and sad. I can't tell you how long we stayed there.
Were you in a camp?
Yes, a huge camp, yes.
Yeah. And did it take the heat get some... It's not again. Did the heat take some getting used to?
No, the heat didn't worry us. In the old days of the Indian Army, if you went out without your topi and what you call a back protector in the sun, then you were on charge. But we didn't bother, we just stripped off and we were wearing a pair of shorts.
So that was your uniform, was it? Shorts and...
Yes, in action we just wore shorts and of course boots, and we used to be not brown but almost black.
Did they give you any sort of sunscreen creams?
No, it's nothing like that. No. If you found it was too hot, then you wore your shirt, of course.
How did people at a very fair cope then?
That I couldn't tell you.
I
remember my shoulders, they were bronze. They were never seemed to get sunburned or irritated. Mm. Probably we did it a little bit at a time, I don't know.
So was it just your regiment at that camp?
There was lots of regiments. Yes, a huge, terrific, huge camp. It was a place where you were massed and then you were sent off to different areas.
And did you have the local Indians working in
there? Yes, the local Indians had jobs there. There's a charwala, that's a teawala. And the man who came and shaved you in bed in the morning, but I didn't want that, blow that. They want the dobi wala, the one who did the washing for you. Yes, they had some good jobs, these Indians. And I bet they were sorry when the British left.
So did you find the Indians... good workers?
Definitely, yes, yeah. Yes.
Were they light-fingered like the Arabs?
They were light-fingered, yes. Not all of them, of course. Loose wallers, we call them, loose wallers.
So what sort of training and stuff did you do while you were there?
Just things to occupy us. We had no guns there or anything, so it was mostly route marches and exercises, that's all. There wasn't any war training as it is.
What did you do about water supplies? Did you have...
Well, there was plenty of water there.
How did you sterilise it?
Well, we had no trouble with water. There was plenty of drinking water there, yes.
So did you have to put sort of sterilisation tablets or something in it?
Not individually. I think that was done from the cookhouse.
And what sort of food did you have? Did you bring your own food or a source of food?
No, we had good food in Dulali, yes. Good food. I remember coming out of the cookhouse with a tin plate with vegetables and meat. And as I got away from the cookhouse in the open, going over to the place where I was going to sit down and eat it, I got a smack across the face. It was what's called a kite hawk. Came down, grabbed the meat, and away it went.
Goodness.
Of course, nobody warned us about that. We soon got wise to it. You had to hold your plate and go like that. But what we used to do, for a joke, We used to get a piece of meat on one end of a long piece of string, and on the other end, tie a great big piece of newspaper. A car cart would come down, take the meat, and away go with this newspaper. Shout out to him. Yeah. Kite hawks. Yeah. Of course, we didn't call them kite hawks.
No, I can imagine.
Yes, I won't repeat it.
Did you have much problem with insects and snakes and stuff?
Oh, yes, dear. Snakes was the bane of my life. When I came back to this country, for 2 years I dreamed of snakes. Snakes in the dining room, snakes in the kitchen, snakes all over the house. For 2 years, and then it suddenly stopped. Replaced by other dreams. Mm. Yes, I had a couple of experiences with snakes.
Come on, tell me about them.
Well, we were warned in India that the most deadly snake was about 2 feet long, called a crate. And we were told what colour it was, watch out for them. My first encounter with one of them was walking across the paddy field to the naffy. And right in front of me, on the paddy bun that I was walking, was this crate. Fortunately, I had a stick and I hit him. It must have got fast on the end of the stick and it must have gone up in the air. I never saw him anymore. And the next experience with a snake was in India. We slept on charpoys, that's little wooden beds that the Indians made. Next morning, I went under the bed to get my boots, and there was a big snake skin. He'd been in during the night and shed his skin. I sent that home to the wife, the skin, and I think she's still got it somewhere. And then the next experience was we were on parade one morning. The guns in front of us were covered up with tarpaulins. And from out of the tarpaulin came a huge 6-foot-long black cobra. And one of the officers, he was very brave, he went up to it, and as it reared up, he hit it with a piece of wood and killed it. Yeah, I always remember that, very brave it was. And the sergeant major came round and said, right, oh then, you've seen what's happened. Now keep your eyes open, because that snake has got a mate, and it's going to come looking for it. Sure enough, one of our lads went to bed, we were in bell tents. Lifted up his mosquito net, and there's a bloody snake on his bed, coiled up. You can guess he ran fast. Yeah.
Doesn't induce you to go to sleep very easily, does it?
Well, you had to examine your boots to make sure there was nothing inside. I don't think there was any scorpions there, but there were in the desert, lots of scorpions, and they did have to examine their boots to make sure there's nothing inside. And then finally, the last thing with the snake, we were on the move. We stopped for a break. And on this side was a, I think it's called a chong, like a stream, down in a tiny little recess. And on the other side was this big black cobra again. And I remember throwing stones at it because it couldn't get at us. Yeah, and I think that's the last I had about snakes.
What were your toilet facilities like?
Oh, you said, well, in camps, it wasn't too bad. A long plank that you sat on, all in a row, in a big deep pit. Hygienic, yes, and it was cleaned out often by the Indians. But of course, when we were in action or on the move, we had to dig our own hole with our spades. So there was no problems there.
So how long were you at camp, at Dulali?
I always think about a month, yeah.
And did you get your post from home? Did you get your post as you got to Cape Town and stuff like that?
Post was very infrequent. I don't think we got any post until we got to Burma. I can't remember any post in India. Mm. You get all the letters in one go, and then there'd be a long, long break where you got nothing. Mm. And the post was, well, you could expect that in Burma.
Was it a highlight when the post arrived?
Oh, was it? Yes, you all crowd round. Some would have bad news, some would have good news. We should share each other's letters. Mm. Yeah.
What did you know of what was going on at home about the Blitz?
Nothing. We knew nothing at all. We didn't even know when D-Day was on. Mm. We only learned about it afterwards. Mm. Yeah. Obviously, we were known as a forgotten army because all the equipment had to go to the continent, obviously. We had to sort of make our own. If we wanted to cross a river, we had to tie logs together and go across like that, get the Indians to help us. Mm. We were very short of equipment until No, doing D-Day, and then we started getting stuff after D-Day.
So when you left Doolally,
we travelled across India on a train.
I was going to say, how did you get? Yes.
We travelled across India on a train.
Was it very crowded?
Oh, definitely, yes.
You see these Indian trains of people hanging off the
That's
tops.
Right. I always remember when we came to a steep incline, the train would just get to the top, couldn't make it, would run back and have another go. Yes, have another go, and finally we got over. But it was so hot, we used to sit on the running board like this. And when they stopped, we used to go up to the engine with our mugs and get hot water for tea. The driver used to turn on a tap and hot steaming water came out and we had hot water for our tea. Yeah, I remember that. That was interesting, though, that drive across India.
How long did that take?
I think it was 3 days here, I'm not sure.
Did you sleep on the train?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, it must have been good.
Did you stop? How did you eat?
We had rations.
Yeah.
Which consisted of hard biscuits, and they said it was from First World War, I won't be a bit surprised, and tins of bully beef. Tins of bully beef, which you can still buy in shops now. Mm. But of course it was so hot, when you open them you could pour it out. And that eventually took us across the Indian Ocean. I remember that crossing.
Right, so you spent about a month crossing India, 3 days crossing India.
That's
on,
right,
a train.
Right, on a train.
And,
that's right.
And you came to a port.
I can't remember the name of the port.
And then you...
I can't remember the name of the port, but then we went across the Indian Ocean.
On a ship?
Not the old Beta. I've got the name upstairs, but I can't remember the name. I won't remember the name, so I've got them upstairs. Mm-hmm. There's four ships I've been on. Britannic, the old Beta, and the one I came home on, I can't remember.
Okay.
Anyhow, we crossed the Indian Ocean.
How long did that take?
That I can't remember. All I can remember about that was I was put in charge of an Oerlikon gun. And I'd never been taught how to fire an Oerlikon gun at all. I thought, well, this is pretty good. They got me up here with this gun. If there's any aircraft, and I've never fired one of these. So I only assumed it was loaded and all you had to do was pull the trigger. So that was my duties on that for a time.
So you spend most of the day up there next to your gun?
That's right.
Yeah.
Taking my turn, of course,
yes.
Being relieved. Mm. Not all day, perhaps 4 hours or 2 hours or something. And that landed us at Chittagong.
Chittagong.
Which is the borders of India and Burma. Chittagong is India, actually.
And did you go into a camp there, or did you move straight on?
Chittagong, yes. We went into a camp for a very short while, and then moved up into Burma.
Were you told... What sort of experience or training did you have for going into Burma?
None at all, dear. None of the troops in Burma were trained in jungle warfare. None of them. None of them. We had to learn it as we went along. Jungle warfare. Mm.
So, after you'd been in Chittagong for a month, were you given more equipment?
The equipment we had was all khaki-coloured. And they produced 40-gallon drums, which used to contain oil from abroad.
Mm.
And it was filled up with green dye, and everything we had, pants, socks, shirts, the whole damn lot, went into this, and they all came out green.
Mm.
Of course, when we wore them, we were green as well. Yeah, that's ready for the jungle. Mm. Yeah.
And so, after you'd been at Chittagong, what were your duties then?
Driving.
Driving.
Yeah.
And what were you going driving there?
Officers, driving officers.
In a jeep
mostly, yes.
Yeah. Willie's jeep.
I can't remember whether it was a Willie's jeep or a Ford jeep.
Mm.
I can't remember. But I love the little jeep. It can go anywhere.
Mm.
Four-wheel drive. Mm.
So you left Chittagong to go where?
Well, then we started advancing into Burma. Into the Arakan, what's called the Arakan.
Mm-hmm. How many of you? What was your force consisting of that you were with? There was a regiment.
Yes, the whole regiment. Yes.
And were you going to meet up with somebody else or relieve somebody or?
No, we weren't relieving anyone.
Attacking force.
Sorry.
An attacking force, were you?
No, a survey regiment is not a combat force.
No.
It's what you call, what you call it, the service force. It works with the guns, and it works with the guns mostly. Yes. Works with our own guns.
Yeah.
So,
and did you have the guns with you or not? No.
Well, no. We the survey regiment did not have its own guns.
No.
You work with the gun regiments.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So you set off. Was everybody in lorries and things at the time?
That's right, yeah, our own transport, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So you left Chittagong and moved where?
Through the Arakan.
Yes. What were the roads like?
The roads were pretty good then, until of course we got right into Burma. Yes, the roads from Chittagong, they were proper metallic roads. It was only later on that they became dusty tracks. Mm.
And how long did it take you to get to where the other guns were, the other regiments where the guns were?
I couldn't recollect that, my love. I couldn't recollect that. Mm. Not very long, I know that. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get attacked by Japanese aircraft? Or?
That's rather funny, I remember that. The convoy stopped. It was paddy fields. You know what a paddy field is, mm, with a raised bun. Mm. And we all got out. The cookhouse was getting rations ready for us. And we all sat on these buns with our tin plates and mess tins, etc. Three planes appeared overhead. And the sergeant major says, "All right, lads, don't worry about them. They're ours, they're Spitfires. So would you worry?" And next thing, these three planes started coming down. They were Japanese Zeros. You've never seen such a scramble in your life. Bugs, plates and everything. We all ran for cover underneath the lorries, of course. Strangely enough, they must have thought we weren't worth doing anything. They just looked and flew away. Mm. Yeah. We would have been sitting ducks if they'd have opened up. Mm. Never understood why they didn't open up. They must have thought we weren't worth it.
Mm. Were you scared?
Well, I can't say we were scared. We were too excited. In a hurry to be scared. You run for your life and that's it. There were times, of course, afterwards that I was scared. I prayed. Mm. But that's a different story. Mm.
Mm. And the officer you were driving, was he a nice guy?
Oh, yes, I got on well with the officers, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
they did their share.
So you continued along the road towards Burma. Did you know what was ahead of you? I mean, did you know what the...
No, we weren't briefed about anything at all. Mm. Nothing. No idea what to expect at all.
They didn't tell you about anything about Japanese?
All they told us was he was a brave fighter, which he was, because for him it was an honour to die for the emperor. And that they would never be taken prisoner. They wouldn't allow themselves to be taken prisoner. They'd commit suicide rather than be taken prisoner. But then later on they changed the tune. They said, "We are equivalent to him. He's not as hardy as what we've been made to believe." But that was later time.
So your convoy continued along until you made what contact with the gun regiment?
That's right, yeah, yeah. Then we started working with the guns. Each time the guns went forward, we went forward with them, working with them.
What sort of guns were they, did they have?
25 pounders.
Yeah, did they was that with the Humber, the gun and lumber?
That's right, yeah. Mm. Yes, yes, right. And they were pulled by a great big, like tractors. They were called quads, that's right, quads.
Humber quad, yeah. Mm.
Wonderful vehicles. If they got stuck in the mud, they just brought out a long cable from the front, tied it round a tree, started the engine up and pulled themselves out, guns and the whole lot. Mm.
So you obviously met up with the regiment with the guns.
That's
were they
right.
Good chaps?
Oh yes, we're all pals together, yes, yes, yes.
And how long had they been there?
I don't know, dear. I don't know how long they'd been there at all.
Had they seen much action?
Yes, from what tales we heard, they had seen action, yes. Mm. Mm. But of course, remember, artillery is not right forward. We got the nickname of the long-range snipers. That was our nickname, long-range snipers.
Mm. So how far from the front line would they be then?
the guns. I couldn't tell you how far here, but far enough to see the flashes of the Japanese guns and to hear the explosion of the Japanese guns, because that's what we were doing, flash spotters and sound rangers.
So tell me exactly how that works then.
That I couldn't tell you there, because I was with headquarters driving officers around. Yeah. So I mean, flash spotters, for instance, they have an instrument on a tripod, and when the flash of the Japanese gun comes, they record it. And same with the sound rangers, they have instruments on tripods, and they get the sound of the Japanese gun, and they're able to work how far away they are.
And then they pass that on to the guns?
Pass that on to the guns who fire.
For the range.
That's right,
man.
That's all I could tell you about that, because, as I say, I was driving all the time.
Yeah. How far do you think you drove then from Chittadong to before you reached the other guns?
I can't remember now. I can't remember. I know it was at least 2 or 3 days' drive.
So as the guns move forward, you move with them?
You move with them, that's right. Oh, yeah.
And did your guns come under fire as well?
I've got no recollection of that. I've no recollection of shells dropping anywhere near us. No.
So what happened? You were attached to the guns?
Well, my job, driving officers, was to visit various places. I often went up to the front, as far as we dare go, visiting different units.
What was the morale like?
The morale was good. Yeah, even in the monsoons, the morale was good. Yeah. The first monsoon season, we had to pull out. You couldn't fight. You couldn't move your transport in the monsoon season, because you had to go over mountains. But the second monsoon season, Mountbatten said, "We're not pulling out this time. We're going to push on." So we did. And we got soaked, obviously. We had no clean change of clothing, no dry clothing. But we didn't worry, because you got wet through, and the next thing the sun would come out, you'd dry off, and then it'd rain again. And we loved it when the monsoon came out, because you got a lump of soap, stripped off naked, and stood under there, and you had a shower and a good wash down. So we didn't worry much about that.
So how did you manage with your Jeep? To cope with the conditions?
Yes, the Jeep was a lovely little thing. It would go around the mountain tracks. The Royal Engineers went ahead, of course, and they cut into the mountain tracks with a mountain on this side and a 1,000-foot drop on that side. And the Jeeps would go around, but when it got too bad, then it was mules had to go. And as you went along these tracks, you could see down below lorries that had gone over, driven mostly by the Indians.
So you had Indian drivers?
Not in our regiment.
No.
There were Indian regiments with Indian drivers. And a lot of them had only just been taught to drive.
Did you have much contact with the Indian?
Yes. Quite a lot of contact with the Indians and the Gurkhas, yes. Yeah.
What did you think of them?
Oh, very well. There's every nationality: Sikhs, Hindus, Gurkhas, all you could think of, every colour you could think of.
Good professional soldiers?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Did you have any regimental get-togethers of any sort? Or?
No, not out there, not in active service, no.
So you went deeper and deeper into the mountains?
That's right, love, yeah.
Do you know what part you were in?
Yes, there was one part, it was the mountains were called the Mayu Range. And one of the passes went through tunnels, which was called Nekidoik Pass. We used to call it Okidok Pass. Nekidoik Pass, yes. Tunnels through the mountain. And that was a scene of a big fight, which took place before I got that far.
Can you tell me something about that?
I couldn't tell you the details of that. I know it was... the Japanese were pushed back there. I forget what regiment fought there. It's all gone from me now.
Did you ever see any Japanese prisoners of war?
No, I didn't see any Japanese prisoners of war. Heard them, but we didn't take. No, we took very few Japanese prisoners of war because they used to commit suicide rather than be taken. It was an insult to them to be taken. That's why they treated us so badly. They spit at us because we were, because they didn't believe in the Geneva Convention.
And you, did you see many wounded ones, or did they?
No, I can't say I did, my love. No, I didn't. I didn't see many at all, but you could hear them. We used to, when we stopped, we used to get as far up a hill as we could and dig in. And at the bottom of the hill, we used to put wire all the way around, telephone wire. And on this wire, we used to hang tins and put little pebbles and stones in. So the chap came in, make the tins a noise, but they were crafty. They used to tie some wire to it and go back into the jungle and pull it to make the noise of the tins, hoping that we would open fire and they could see where our machine guns were positioned. But we soon got wise to that. Or they'd come as far as the wire and shout, "Help me, Tony, Tommy, I'm injured. Help me, I'm Johnny, help me," you know, imitating the English. Of course, we never fell for that either. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you find that creepy at night, being surrounded
by... Oh, yes. Now, that's the worst thing, when you were on guard at night.